This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Well, the people are very split on whether or not Seth would like the movie Draft Day. We'll get to the text page in just a second.
I thought they were split on my opinion about toes out on deadlift or squat. That's a very divisive topic. So I figured the text line would have said, Seth, what the hell are you talking about?
I did get a couple texts of people that are now a little self-conscious about their duck feet after we talked about it. But don't be.
I was trying to build them up.
Yeah.
I was telling them that they're a disenfranchised class. They need to stand up for themselves on their duck feet instead of having me do it for them, Dan.
I don't think they realized they were disenfranchised. I think they're like, we were? Now I have to be
really?
Mad
they didn't
about
realize
this.
People were talking about them?
Yeah. They admire and are thankful, a lot of gratitude that you are sticking up for them. But yes, the duck-feeted people. Yeah, people are talking.
I feel like, definitely with prospects, with offensive line, we were talking about Donovan Jackson, who's kind of duck-footed. They'll say slew-footed, too. That's another one.
Oh.
I don't know what it is, but I'm sure it's somehow bigoted. It's probably it's probably rooted in something. They act like, he's kind of duck-footed.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, so what's the drawback? You know, looks like a duck when he walks. Like, all right, but... Tell me how that affects us, because he looks like a duck, and ducks can't run for crap.
You know, those people. Yeah, basically. Pretty much. All right, so Roosh Williams put up a poll. Roosh does a lot of basketball content online, Rockets-related stuff, and put up a poll. And Seth, I don't know if you've looked at this poll yet, but it's this particular poll, it's not so much about the results.
Yeah,
it's about reveling in the fact that we no longer live in this era when these things happened.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've looked at the options because you had written them down, but I didn't. I wanted to guess on who's winning the poll. Which one won it. Yeah.
All right. So here are the options. And the question is, what is the funniest moment of the Rockets rebuild? And here are the four choices. And I have, there's at least one or two of these. I'm like, oh, my God, I forgot that happened. Kevin Porter Jr. leaving at halftime of a game. I went and read the article on this. He was not happy with the fact that John Lucas got up in his face.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But that's what John Lucas does. He gets up in people's faces. So Kevin Porter Jr. just get up and out of there. He just left Toyota Center at halftime of a game.
Just left the game.
Just left. Yeah. Just completely left the arena. Yeah. So that's choice number one. Man, that reminded me of Christian Wood, too, because I remember those two got in trouble kind of together at about that time. Kevin Porter Jr. Christian Wood might be my least favorite Rocket player of all time. I hated Christian Wood.
They were both suspended the same day.
Yeah.
And it was around the same game, was it not?
It was. I think Christian Wood probably, I don't know, may have gotten into an argument with somebody or whatever. Conduct detrimental is what they usually call
something. He pouted over Silas's punishment for him failing to show up for the team's daily COVID testing, which caused the team's shoot around to be delayed.
Okay.
So apparently, he was punished somehow. He was benched, and then he pouted, and then later, like, he didn't want to check into the game when Silas called.
That's
on
what
him
it was.
He was reluctant to even go into the game. Yep. So you had two guys in one game just either leave the facility or be reluctant to play.
Yes.
Hey, Christian Wood only plays when Christian Wood's ready to play.
Silas did not command the room, man. He just did not. That's number one. Number two, speaking of Steven Silas, and we've got the audio for this. After a loss, a 140-120 loss to the Sacramento Kings on February 6, 2023, this was Steven Silas in the postgame.
They're not giving that effort on the defensive end. They're not getting after it like they're supposed to. They're not getting into their man and fighting over and helping each other. They're not doing what they're supposed to do.
Okay, at that point, we were 3 years into the Steven Silas era. And
it just felt way too much. Like, man, Silas is trying to do something. That
where was this 2 years ago? Yeah. That kind of fire.
When it didn't, in the moment, it didn't. Was there a single person that believed that Paul Silas was genuinely that angry or perturbed? I think to his credit, he's even Steven, which is an admirable thing to be.
Yes.
So don't try to. It was like, you know, it was almost like Brian Kelly has that D-bag side to him. But it was obvious that one time last year when he pounded the table that, like, all right, Brian Kelly, like, this is contrived. You're going a little too far.
Very much so. Number three, funniest moments of the Rockets rebuild. Bruno Fernando starting a game, the season opener in Steven Silas's last year. Bruno Fernando started at center over Alperen Şengün.
Well, you got to see what you got in him.
Şengün's second year. Yeah. Boy, that got Rocket fans, especially Şengün fans, pissed on opening night that year. Like, this is
With Şengün, it's always interesting to try to gauge exactly what the entire fan base feels about anything, because there's a national pride side to it of the Turkish fans that are gonna go in hard, and you're always like, okay, well, wait a second, all right, which part of this is the Turkish people sticking up for a countryman versus the average Rockets fan.
Yep. Yeah. Number four on the list, Roosh just puts Gary Bird. Remember Garrison Matthews, that stretch he had where Craig Ackerman would scream, Gary Bird! He'd hit a three-pointer, and turns out Garrison Matthews. And he got a contract, like, not a big one, but a little, you know, like a decent amount of money. Money that smart with, you should be okay.
All right, so if I have to vote between these four, The one that sticks the most out in my mind was the Porter Jr. leaving the game at halftime.
Okay.
But I'm wondering if, like, it's framed, what was the funniest moment?
Funniest moment, that's right. Yeah.
And so I wonder if people answer it that way, they probably... The Porter Jr. was the moment where it felt like, what the hell are we doing
well
here?
And that was early on. That was like a year before all this other stuff too. Porter Jr. Thing was not funny. That was like, okay, this thing's a mess. Like, this is a dumpster fire right now.
I'm gonna say the funniest one was just the visual for me of Silas banging the table in frustration.
Yes.
I feel bad because I like him a lot. Just it was a mismatch.
He was brought in to coach James Harden and Russell Westbrook, and he winds up coaching Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün and Gary Bird. Yeah. All right, Seth was correct. Now, do you care to guess the percentage?
Yeah, it was in a field of four. That's a difficult one.
Yep.
I'm gonna guess that Silas won pretty healthily, though. So I'll say 43%.
36%.
Okay, so no ding there.
No ding. In fact, you get a buzz for that.
What was the lowest?
The lowest was Gary Bird, and if I had to guess, if I thought long enough, I could probably find one funnier than that. Gary Bird got 11%. KPJ leaving at halftime, 21%. It was really close between Silas banging the table and Bruno Fernando starting at center in the opener in 2023 or 2022-23 over Alperen Şengün. But 35%. 35% for Steven Silas.
The weakness of Gary Bird is that it's not a specific moment. So its weakness as an option here was, instead of a specific moment, it was the Gary Bird era that people found funny.
Yep. So there you go. The funniest. Now, you ask an interesting question. What if we were to put together the same poll for the Texans? This is a good text page question. if you were putting that same poll together, because the Texans and the Rockets, as we pointed out many times, kind of have run in tandem with their rebuilds here, from the marquee player on the team demanding a trade on in the same week to the hiring of various coaches along the way where we're like, all right, this ain't going to work out, to the hiring of two coaches now who I think people feel very bullish on, to finding your franchise, your future sort of foundational guys for both teams. Very similar, but the if you had to put this same poll together, funniest moments of the Texans rebuild.
I'll tell you what, I don't know if this would make the cut as an option because it's not, again, it's not really a poignant moment or one that a lot of people even heard. But for me, the toughest one for me was, and like the most ridiculous one was at the end of David Culley's lone season with the Texans, he was on with Mark and John, and Mark or John asked him like, hey, what was something you learned this year? And he said, this is a man who had been in the NFL for multiple decades, remember. He said he learned that sometimes when things aren't going well offensively, you can speed up the tempo to get things moving. And it was like it was a brand new concept to him that had never been. And I'm like, this is what this guy was coaching. He was a head coach of an NFL team for an entire year. And it wasn't just that, like, oh, wow, we should have been utilizing that more effectively or whatever. It was a brand new and novel concept to him that teams might go up-tempo to try to get things going.
Seth.
It would be like a basketball coach, 55, 60 years old, saying, hey, you know what? Sometimes when things aren't going well, just try to get some layups.
Yeah,
or, you know what? I'd never heard that
or
before.
You know what? We decided sometimes we need to slow the other team down. You can go zone. I didn't know you could go zone. You can play zone defense. Here's the scary thing about that. You know what his title was with the Ravens the year before he got the Texans head coaching job?
His assistant head coach and pass game coordinator?
Assistant head coach and passing game coordinator. Yeah, and wide receivers coach. He was the passing game coordinator.
For a team that was just abysmal at passing.
Well, but you would think a passing game coordinator would know something about tempos. That's my point.
Yeah.
So that's, I would say, look, if I had to put this poll together for the Texans, you could go almost all Culley on that, like for the funniest moments of the, we're talking funniest moments of the Texans rebuild. I would say when David Culley said that I took this job
simply because there's 32 of these in this league.
Ben was on it, man. I didn't even have to say anything to Ben. That was because we were at a point with the Texans that we were so far down the rabbit hole of absurdity at that point.
Yeah.
That like all you could do about the Culley, we knew we were in for a rebuild, you know, so all you could do was laugh, and you knew, you could tell from two questions in that David Culley was not going to be the head coach of this team when it turned around at some point, you know?
That was, I remember that very well, and I would have to vote for that one because it was also my favorite moment in the history of me doing radio was when the analogy I made was, it's like telling your wife that you married her because she has all the holes you like. Yeah, that's a...
Yes.
You got...
She a female.
Yeah, you'll
Why'd you marry her? She a female. Yeah.
She a female, and she accepted the offer, so good enough for me.
Yep.
Happy Valentine's Day.
If I didn't want to pile on David Culley, I would say when Lovie Smith started to get chippy with the media during his 1 year there, you know, like when he started to get a little surly. Although every time Lovie Smith would say divorce is a good thing, I got a good chuckle out of that, I would say. Those could all be
tied. He said it so often.
Yeah.
It was a...
Well, there are a lot of divorces, Seth.
I know, but it felt like we were getting at least one or two a week.
You're right.
It was like the fact that there was reason to say it as often as he did, but that was also his go-to analogy. It wasn't just like once or twice or anything. It was like, oh no, this is written up on my my wall as rules to live by. Yeah.
I would say divorce is a good thing.
Yes, I would say Deshaun playing safety at practice in the walkthroughs.
During a walkthrough.
With the shower cap on. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good. Text in some entries for that one. The funniest moments of the Texans rebuild. We can relive this now because we're in a much better place. All right. Here's some texts about you watching the movie Draft Day.
And whether I'll like it or not.
Whether you'll like it or not. Okay. Let's see. Seth will hate Draft Day, all exclamation points. Draft Day is a must watch. Watch it yesterday. Yes, Seth, do it. Now, that's encouraging somebody to do it. That's not saying whether or not Seth will like it or not.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that admit that it's an awful movie, and yet they still love
There's nobody that says it makes sense. That's the thing. There's nobody that says this is a great depiction of what Draft Day is.
Okay, you know what? I just watched the Bob Dylan movie, A Complete Unknown. And the whole thing, I know some people had hang-ups with that movie because it's not historically accurate. I've seen people say that it's more like you got to look at it like an impressionist painting. It's not a depiction of reality, but it captures the spirit of Bob Dylan really well.
Yeah.
I liked that. I really liked that movie, despite even as I've watched so many damn Bob Dylan documentaries, I was annoying myself as I went through it and being like, well, that didn't actually happen that way. But I did enjoy the movie.
Okay.
So if I can look at Draft Day is an impressionist painting.
Yeah.
And that, okay, there's truths here.
Yeah.
Even though the facts and even though the details might be a little screwy, that it's still a good movie. I'll see if I can watch it through that filter.
The thing with Draft Day is there's just a few things where you go, that would never happen. That it's not done that way. But there's enough, you're right, there's enough of it where it's still enjoyable. For people who like it, that's a great, I think the people who like it look at it the way you look at that Dylan movie. I think that's a good analogy. I watch Draft Day. These are texts. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. I watch it every week before the draft. I think Seth will both love and hate it.
Yeah.
And now Garrett, the web guy, I think captured it perfectly, who texts us frequently during the show. Loyal listener, former coworker. We love Garrett. I think this is perfect. He says Seth is going to hate that he was entertained by Draft Day.
Okay.
Yeah.
It would be like a guilty pleasure.
It's a total guilty pleasure, dude. It is a guilty. Yeah. It is as guilty a pleasure as there is. Movie wise, text message. I love that movie. It's so absurd, and they make Jacksonville and their new GM look so dumb. That is true. There's a hotshot young GM that works for the Jags in that movie, Seth. That
could it be like the Magnificent Gladstone?
A little bit, a little. This guy, Matt, the Magnificent Gladstone, at least appears to be empirically intelligent.
Yeah.
This kid they hired in Jacksonville in the movie is a nervous dope. It's
all right,
awesome.
I'm gonna watch Draft Day.
Okay.
I'll give a review on Monday.
Okay.
And I'll also do a TikTok movie review.
Okay, good.
That's what I want to be in life, really. That's what I dream of being when I grow up, is a TikTok movie reviewer. So I'll do one of Draft Day. It'll be a good transition. I'll do sports movies at first, and then I'll move into arcane art films.
Yes. It'll be good because at least... And I think you get the analogies already. Like, if you've heard enough people make the analogies, then you just know, having not even watched the movie. But you'll understand about the legend of Bo Callahan now. And
I will. Yeah, no, I vaguely get it. But, okay.
You watch the movie. Now, it does get a little uncomfortable because you know who plays Bo Callahan's agent in the movie? Diddy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, too. Watching it now, after a lot of things have happened with the actors in the movie. Like Jennifer Garner.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'll tell you what, because of her credit card commercials, she kind of annoys me now.
Okay.
I'm tired of seeing her on those, are they Capital One commercials?
Capital
Whatever
One.
They are.
Yeah, Capital One.
Yeah. She kind of gets on my nerves.
Okay.
So I'll try to set all that aside and just remember her as I once knew her at the time, Ben Affleck's lovely soon-to-be ex-bride.
That's right. That's right.
They got divorced pretty soon after that.
After that, they did, 2014, 2015 in there. All right, Payne and Pendergast. All right, let's do this. Five Reasons I Hate You, Duke Hoops. We got help yesterday from this one on former North Carolina, from former North Carolina Tar Heel, Brendan Haywood. So we will we'll play his five reasons, and we got five more. Let's get our hate on for Duke for our Cougs this weekend. We'll do that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's do it. Five Reasons I Hate You. Man, the text page is popping. Is Seth going to like the movie Draft Day? And funniest moments of the Texans rebuild is dominating right now. But let's get you guys good and lathered up for the Final Four this weekend. We'll get to some texts as well. Five Reasons I Hate You, Duke Hoops, and
this is a tough one.
Yeah,
I mean it's tough to whittle it down.
Top
honestly,
five.
we've got 13 reasons on the show prep.
Yes,
I spent far too long on this last night and this morning, and even then it was a whole lot of me cutting stuff out. There's a lot. People, turns out, Sean, people don't like Duke basketball.
They really hate Duke. Now, do we want to, for this purpose of time? Because we can do both eventually between now and the end of the show. Brendan Haywood was on with us yesterday and did his five reasons. Do we want to save that for maybe the last segment to get our hate on at the end of the show?
Yeah, let's do that.
Save that and do our five reasons right now for hating Duke. Hey,
in one of those infographic maps, by the way, that Jimmy Shapiro sent us, it's pretty cool. It shows the states, which team various states are supporting. And this was, it was almost like America has healed.
America's team, yes.
Yeah, as opposed to looking at various political color-coded maps and everything, this was Houston Cougar red pretty much across the land. In red states, blue states, everywhere else. It was just people almost unanimously want the Houston Cougars to win the national championship.
84% of the people, 84% of the states are Cougar red on this map. And again, this is not just, that map is not just them against Duke this week. And this is against all three other teams, against Auburn, Florida, and Duke. I got to imagine, I thought about that.
Alabama, Washington, North Carolina, all obviously were not Cougars. And then there was one of the Midwest states, and then Maine, I think, weren't Cougars. But by and large, it was the vast majority were all Houston Cougar supporters.
I think generally around the country, people, if you're not in the SEC, you hate the SEC for football.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were like, well, I'm not going to root for Auburn or Florida. Ugh, gross. People hate Duke because of basketball, unless you're a Duke fan. So I think, you know, some of it was like, yeah, you know what? This Cougar team, they have a vibe that we can get behind. But this segment is not five reasons we love the Cougs. It's five reasons we hate Duke. So let's get to ours. We'll play Brendan Haywood later in the show. He was excellent. And if you're wondering where Coach K is in our five reasons I hate you, Brendan Haywood stole it. So these are five reasons, five new reasons to hate Duke. It was pretty easy to find them, actually. Christian Laettner, number five. Everybody hates Christian Laettner. Yeah. Everybody hates. I think that was the name of the 30 for 30, right, Ben? Everybody hates Christian Laettner was the name of the 30 for 30 about those Duke basketball teams.
Yeah, and they came up with a bunch of reasons in that documentary to not hate Christian Laettner, but none of them could counteract his eminently punchable face.
Yes,
that was. I'm gonna have to go back and do a Google word search history on punchable face. I would assume that it was invented when Christian Laettner arrived on
maybe,
the scene.
Maybe.
Just an incredibly punchable face, if you could reach it.
Incredibly punchable face, and yet maybe not even the most punchable face on his own team back then. I give you reason number four, Bobby Hurley.
Oh!
Bobby Hurley. More punchable face, Christian Laettner or Bobby Hurley? From back in the day.
Still Christian Laettner, I think, but Bobby Hurley's tough. Bobby Hurley is more just, you want to stuff his head in a toilet, you know?
Yeah, and yet his brother Dan is making a run at being more obnoxious than he was back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Bobby Hurley, man. Bobby Hurley, that is the one case of somebody getting explosive diarrhea that I was like, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad he got explosive diarrhea. Remember when they lost to UNLV by 30, and he's running off the floor with his butt cheeks all clenched up? Yeah, I remember. number three, all of the Plumleys.
Bobby Hurley, too, as a coach, was really just insufferable. Just his antics and everything on the sideline. It's just loathsome.
Number three, all of the Plumleys are tied for third. I don't know which one's which. They all begin with M. Miles, Mason, Marshall. They all played there. I hated them all. There's
they
one
were
of them
always
still,
there.
There's
there
one
was
of them.
The problem was there was all they were always
there.
Was
always there. A Plumlee or one
they,
of more.
They were there for it wasn't like they were one and done or anything. There was like a decade where there was a Plumlee at Duke.
Oh.
So they became synonymous with Duke itself.
Yes, yes. There's even one still. The blonde one is still hanging around, pulling Steven Adams to the ground a week ago. Whatever game that was. Horrible. Hate the Plumlees.
And they're also because they. I almost thought of them as triplets because they all had. They all start with M. Yeah. Miles, Mason, and Marshall.
Yeah, it's weird. One of them looks like Max Headroom, and one of them looks like that supervillain from Superman 2. That gigantic dude that couldn't talk. With the dark hair. It's very
saying
strange.
They look dissimilar.
Very
calling
dissimilar.
Their mama a whore. Is that what you're doing?
I'm not saying anything except pointing out they're dissimilar and hoping that everybody reacts the way you just did. That's all I'm doing. It's just
I got
out.
You. Yeah. Just maybe insinuating.
Yeah. I'm just pointing out hair color. You know.
I don't want to even say this. I guess. No, I won't say it.
Okay.
Never mind. It was something nice. I don't want to say anything.
Five
nice
reasons
about
I hate
it.
You. It's not five.
One of them does have a redeeming quality, but I won't. I'll save that for like 3 years.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at it right. Yeah, you're right. Sorry, we'll save that for five reasons we love one of the Plumleys. Number two, five reasons I hate Duke, non-Coach K. Daniel Jones went to Duke.
Yeah.
Daniel Jones, the most overpaid quarterback who looks like they have no clue what they're doing ever. Like, at least some of the guys who've been overpaid through the years act like a quarterback, look like a quarterback. Daniel Jones looks like he's stupid. He looks dumb.
He looks dumb, which is extra... That makes it extra hate-worthy because he went to a school who will tell you about how smart they all are
yes,
all the time.
Yes.
And remember what his head coach, David Cutcliffe, said about Daniel Jones.
What did he say?
It's a direct quote. Daniel Jones embraces something we believe in here. Real swag is no swag.
Okay, well...
Yeah, great job, Duke football.
Yeah.
You know what? I get so sick and tired of teams who have these built-in excuses for mediocre, acting like mediocrity is somehow a point of pride with them.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, we take pride in the fact that we have no swag and don't win any football games.
A miracle that David...
All you other people out there trying to justify your multi-million-dollar salaries with trivial things like wins, we know that what really matters in life is not having any swag at all.
No swag! Yeah. Miracle David Cutcliffe doesn't have a job in the NIL transfer portal era. That's very strange to me. Number one, it's not even football, it's not even basketball, it's not even sports. Ken Jeong went to Duke, the actor who is probably best known for being Chow in The Hangover.
The Hangover, yeah.
I don't think he's funny. I don't think he's funny when he's on. He does that. Does he do America's Got Talent? He does one of those panel shows where you're trying to find the next big thing, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I don't find him funny in the movies he's in. I find him to be trying way too hard to be funny in interviews that he does when he's at Duke basketball games. He is now associated with Duke because they pan in on him at games.
They're always on him and everything, and you're like, you're waiting for him to do something funny there, or say something witty, and it doesn't really come.
Yeah,
well, he was a doctor that, a medical doctor, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Who got famous. There's a little bit to his career. It feels like the McLovin actor there, where that kid kept getting roles afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, all right, what's going on with this?
Yeah.
Why is this McLovin kid still... Why are they still trying to make him a thing?
Or the
kid from Napoleon Dynamite, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Remember, he got a couple of leading roles after that.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not a big Ken Jeong guy. He's a reason for me to hate Duke. So there you go. You point out.
Oh, yeah, Grayson Allen.
Yeah, throw him in there. Honorable mention.
Yeah.
That's a bad
Grayson
job.
Grayson Allen's
got
to be one of the biggest ones.
Yeah.
Grayson Allen's a perfect example of somehow, like, I guess this is okay because he goes to Duke.
Right.
Like, was there ever a bigger embodiment of the entitled kid that somehow is acting like he might as well be a greaser stabbing somebody in the 50s or something, but because he comes from a good family, youthful hijinks.
Look, we can do this all day long with Duke. J.J. Redick, Chris Collins, Steve Wojciechowski, Quinn Snyder back in the day, Kyle Singler, any white dude that went to Duke. If we just get a list of all the white dudes that went to Duke and counted up the number, and let's call it, during the Coach K era and this era, John Shire was one of these guys before he became the head coach. He was a hated player at Duke with all his contortions of his face. Go Google John Shire face and his looks that he got on his face during games. Just count up the number of white dudes at Duke, and there you go. Like, 38 Reasons I Hate You. Let's start at the top. Quinn Snyder, Christian Laettner, Bobby Hurley. They all slapped the floor when they played defense. Bunch of tryhards.
It's weird. It's one of the strangest quirks of racism in America is how much white people hate white people from Duke.
Yes.
It is. I don't know. I don't know if it's refreshing or concerning.
Yeah.
But man, there's few people more racist than any white person
against white people from Duke. I know. I'm afraid I'm going to get canceled right now.
Why do we hate?
Finally, somebody said it. And if I have to die on that hill, I will. All right. A lot of funniest moments in the Texans rebuild coming in. The most important thing about football is the football, according to David. Pretty much you could just put four Cully quotes up there for that poll.
Most important thing about football is the football.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing about that is other coaches have said that, and people go, oh, okay, yeah. But for some reason, David Cully says it.
Pete Carroll's really big with that one too, and it's one of those things. I don't quite grasp it. Anyway, I don't know if I need to experiment with more substances or something. I never quite get exactly what they never elaborate. They won't like go into like, oh, it's about turnovers or this or that or anything. They just like say it like it's this deep, deep statement.
Yeah.
And that you're not supposed to have any follow up questions.
Right.
All right. Well,
right.
What about the football specifically is it? Please.
Help me out.
Yes.
When David Culley declined the penalty and punted against the Browns.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh.
I'm sorry, Seth.
Oh. He declined a penalty that would have given them another third down attempt.
Yes,
he did. And it was in the opponent's territory, was it not?
It was near midfield.
It was near midfield, he declined the penalty to punt.
The accepting the penalty would have made it like third and long still on your own side of the 50. But unless you think you're throwing an interception on that play, then you shouldn't decline.
What the hell? It was one of the weirdest, dumbest things ever.
Yep. All right,
and you know what? Actually, yeah, in the opponent's territory, it might have made some sense if you're like, all right, well, statistically. No, it didn't.
Made no sense. All right, Payne and Pendergast, take a mania at the top of the hour. Can somebody take down Cataldi in the worst take of the week contest? Up next, we did a little anonymous executive yesterday for the Texans. There is one thing that anonymous executives are saying about one team and one college player that I think is really stupid. Fire all these executives that say this. I will tell you what it is coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, a couple clarifications here. The Masked Singer is the show that Ken Jeong is part of the panel. I knew it was something. I can picture him sitting. Someone says, if you don't think he's funny in The Hangover, you just have a lame sense of humor. I didn't say that. I think he is funny in The Hangover. I don't think he is personally funny. Like, he gets treated like a stand-up comic. You know what I mean? Like, he gets treated like, oh, this is somebody we can go to and interview during a game, and we're just going to get some funny viral clips, and I just don't see it.
I don't think you had to clarify that. That was somebody's
poor listening
skills.
For somebody, I did.
Skills.
This guy right here, I had to. Yeah. Hmm. So there you go. All right. We will do another Five Reasons I Hate You in the last segment of the show, but it will be that of Brendan Haywood, former North Carolina Tar Heel center who came on with us yesterday. He had some good thoughts on the Cougs, too. We'll devote the last segment of the show since we're kind of getting ready for the Final Four, which you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610. You can hear the Cougs right here on Sports Radio 610, 7:49 p.m. tip.
You know what annoys me about Duke the most this year is that they seem to have a lot of those same issues, and their fans are just as annoying as they've ever been, and yet without a single identifiable guy that you really, really hate. Cooper Flagg doesn't really irk me all that much, but that they're living on the fumes of the legacy of the Coach K era.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I can see that. Because Shire is a Coach K disciple. He's a direct descendant of the Coach K era. I haven't had really a chance to hate Cooper Flagg much, only because I don't watch a bleep ton of regular season basketball, so I haven't been able to dig in. What I've watched from him in the tournament, I actually like. I like the way he plays. He's gonna be the number one pick in the draft. He plays really well at both ends of the floor. I hope he sucks tomorrow. I will say that. Okay, we did some anonymous executive stuff yesterday. Seth, Mike Sando of The Athletic had anonymous executive quotes from folks commenting about each of the AFC teams' off seasons. Seemed like the quotes were pretty positive about the Texans stuff. There's a little, you know, some anonymous executives from around the league, a little up in the air about what they're doing with the offensive line. There was another team, though, when I read the anonymous executive quotes that got very frustrating to me. And it was about Cleveland, and it has zero to do with Deshaun Watson. Let me preface that right now. It has nothing to do with Deshaun Watson. It's the contention that these are executives that are in the NFL wondering if maybe Cleveland should tank. The concept of an NFL team, other teams talking about NFL teams. I don't think teams tank in the NFL. I just don't. But that they would tank for Arch Manning, who has thrown a total of 95 passes at the collegiate level. The treatment of Arch Manning, that he is definitely going to be somebody that's viewed as a generational that's going to be a generational talent that teams should just torpedo a season for is mind-blowing to me based on the complete lack of body of work that we have at the college level. Again, he's thrown 95 passes at the college level. There's Big 12 quarterbacks that throw that in 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah, that somehow you would tank for Arch Manning just because his last name is Manning.
Yeah. Here are the quotes. It's such a weak quarterback draft and free agency class at the quarterback position, one executive said. Is there a temptation to suck for Arch Manning? End quote.
And that's an executive, an unnamed executive, who maybe is an executive on the business side of things or something, and he just knows Arch Manning's name.
There's two more quotes. If I'm Cleveland and I don't love Shedeur Sanders at pick number two, I have a two-time coach of the year, a GM that just got a second contract. So could that regime possibly survive a worst team in the league season to get Arch Manning next year? So this is another exec who's already anointing Arch Manning. Third one here. You're not guaranteed Arch Manning is going to come out, and that's another thing, too, we should point out, or that he will agree to go to Cleveland. So my guess is that Cleveland drafts a quarterback this year. If you were tanking, I don't know why you would give Myles Garrett all that money. End quote. Exactly. Cleveland is still trying. They're trying to come up with a solution to win football games this year.
Yeah, they're definitely not in a position to. There's nobody in that organization on the football side of things that feels like, oh yeah, this is where the magic kicks in.
I can
survive. This is where the grand plan really rolls. Is when in year, however long Andrew Berry's been there, has it been 5-6 years now? The GM,
at least, yeah.
Year six is when we planned on tanking.
Yes,
you're cool, right? You're cool, Mr. Haslam. You'd never fire me, right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Like if you just like Arch is one of four or five guys right now that might end up being the top guy. You got Malachi Nelson. Mm-hmm. You got Lenoris Sellers, the kid from Tennessee.
Yeah, the kid with the long name from Tennessee.
Lama Leava, yeah. Do I pronounce that right? Yeah. All right. So I wonder if that was Mike Sando specifically asking those guys a question about Arch Manning.
Okay.
Because look, Mike Sando's a writer and he knows the clicks are going to be a lot higher in any article or any quote that involves Arch Manning. So I think it might be as simple as that.
Okay.
For that many guys to bring up Arch Manning, I feel like they were answering a question specifically about Arch Manning.
Oh, okay.
Did he put it in the article exactly what question they were responding to?
No, not that I saw. I've only got the quotes in front of me here. I didn't even think about that. That's actually a good point. I think the broader point, the third executive that I quoted in here brought up two things that the other two did not, that I think are very good points about Arch Manning. I think the bad points people are making about Arch Manning is that he should already be considered the number one pick when he's hardly played any college football. The good points about Arch Manning is, look, he might not even come out after his junior year. You know, he played a little bit in 2023, played a little more in 2024. He's going to be the starting quarterback in 2025. I'll point out that both of his uncles who played college football, played quarterback in college football, both stayed all 4 years. And especially Peyton could have easily come out after his junior
year. Well, and Arch Manning has kind of shirked a lot of the NIL side of things. And he's, obviously he's not hurting for, he doesn't need to bail his family out of financial distress
Correct.
Or anything.
Yeah.
That we know of.
That's true. Yeah.
Hmm.
Maybe Cooper's,
yeah.
Cooper's
maybe
involved.
Your aggressive production company plans and everything.
Yeah. Maybe he was involved with the Hoctua Bitcoin thing going on. Yeah, maybe.
That'd be hilarious.
That'd be great.
If Peyton Manning got done. Is that young lady from Tennessee?
She's from Tennessee, yeah.
She's from Tennessee.
Yeah.
If Peyton Manning had put 75% of his money into Hoctua coin.
Caught up in Hoctua. the other point.
I'll tell you one thing, man. Watching Matthew Golden, the wide receiver from Texas, I was just watching a cut-up of all his vertical route targets yesterday. And my God, the number of underthrows by Quinn Ewers. Matthew Golden, if he had been playing with a quarterback like Joe Burrow or something, might have broken records this year.
Yeah.
He had to come back for so many balls or had so many contested catches. It made me like Matthew Golden a lot more, having just I didn't realize how many underthrows he had to deal with.
Yeah, that's wild. The other point this executive makes about the Arch Manning situation, not just that he could stay all 4 years, but the Manning family has maneuvered a Manning out of a bad situation before. You know, specific to, again, they're talking about Cleveland tanking for Arch Manning. there's no guarantee. You know, Arch's namesake, Archie Manning, you know, the grandfather.
Yeah.
He helped engineer Eli out of San Diego and to the New York Giants in the 2004 draft.
Well, and Peyton has maneuvered himself out of situations as well. The time he was accused of putting his butt in that trainer's face.
He was very deft in his maneuvering out of that, yes.
Yeah, the other time that his wife had been shipped the human growth hormone. And
again, great agility in that situation.
And those he maneuvered around those allegations quite deftly.
Sure did. Yeah, I just say, I understand why Arch Manning keeps getting mentioned because he's a Manning. I just, the logic behind it. This is something that would happen in draft day, Seth. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. Who do you guys think you are? You guys think you're the Matthews family?
Yeah.
Family?
Right.
No. You haven't proven that the third generation can be as impressive as the first two generations of Bruce and Clay Matthews. Clay Matthews Sr. Was the grandfather who played in the NFL.
Yep.
And then Bruce and Clay played a combined 40 years in the NFL.
That's not an exaggeration.
Offensive lineman
people.
And linebacker.
Yeah, that's an accurate number.
And then how many of the grandkids have been actual NFL players? At least three, right?
Well, you got Clay Matthews that used to have the long Thor hair for the Green Bay Packers. You got Jake Matthews, right? That plays for the Falcons, just got paid. And is there one more after that?
And I'm blanking on him, but I think there's at least three.
Okay.
Like, that's a prolific football family. But nobody from the third generation of the Mannings has proven a damn thing yet.
Yep.
All right.
Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Ken Jung, completely overrated. Thank you, Texter. I appreciate that. Yes, he's a doctor, someone says, Seth. So the Ken Jung is a doctor. Probably funny in person, not on screen, that I paid to watch. See, I think he's actually kind of, his character is over the top funny in Hangover. Doesn't make the movie or anything. I just don't think he's funny in real life. That's all. Yeah.
And it was Kevin and Jake Matthews are both the son of Bruce Matthews.
Okay.
Jake was an offensive tackle. Jake obviously
is
Jake.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Jake and Kevin played, and then Clay Matthews was the son of Clay Matthews II.
There you go. All right.
People still try to actually sometimes on Clay Matthews. There have been three Clay Matthews in that family that played in the NFL. It's damn impressive.
Yeah, the grandfather's the one nobody knows about. The one in the middle was really good for the Browns back in the 80s. Really good. Zion Williamson overrated from his Duke days. Okay, I like that. Okay, so that's, you know, people are naming that Zion Williamson. The whole text page is other white guys from Duke. I'm glad Zion got in there, you know, to kind of change things up.
Oh, yeah, we're
bit.
Not saying you can't hate black guys from
right,
Duke.
Right, right, right.
It's just, the remarkable part of it is how eager us whites are to hate white people from Duke.
Cherokee
It's
Parks.
Almost like it's, with to a level, honestly, that feels like the way your grandfather in Alabama felt about various people in the 1950s
yes,
or something.
It's
like
uncanny.
It feels like that same level of fervor is reserved for white people towards white Duke basketball players.
Does Angelo Cataldi, white guy, get taken down today in Take-A-Mania? He's been the champ for over 2 months. The worst takes of the week go up against the champ coming up next.